دلوقتي في سوريا هيدينا محاضرة.
معلش استحملوني، انا احاول اتكلم عربي شوية، بس ايه العربي بتاعي برضو ايه على قد حالي. فهي التوبيك النهاردة الـ Western Mind versus الـ Eastern Mind، وهي يعني we're continuing the theme of evangelism to the West. The purpose is just يعني to talk about some thoughts to talk about some thoughts and the differences between the West and the East. يعني these are, for the lack of a better expression, يعني when I say Western mind it doesn't necessarily mean just the West, and when I say Eastern mind it doesn't mean the East only. It's just يعني we have people who have more Western minds here than in the West, and the opposite as well. Well, it's just worth clarifying, and neither way of thinking is better than the other. This is just trying to emphasize the differences, because when we start evangelism in the West, we have to take a bit of a different approach. So it's not that one way is more modern or better than the other. It's just that we have to think differently when we approach the West. So, okay.
So,
And I think as we address the West, the first step is really to acknowledge that it's going to be different. We're not in Africa, we're not in Egypt, we're not exactly going to be able to do the same approach we took. If in the past we did a development program, or we did some kind of project, for example a medical mission, it might not be the suitable approach. So the first step is just acknowledging there's a difference. And then the second step is just to understand the culture, to learn about the Western culture, the customs, to learn how they think, what appeals to them, to understand why some of them are rejecting Christianity currently, to understand what kind of evangelism efforts have already been done, which ones have failed. And I think the good part about dealing with the West is there's a lot more information and literature, and it's a lot easier to research than trying to find these same things in Africa. And then the final step is to develop a comprehensive approach towards evangelism in the West. So this would be the key details of how we want to approach them. What kind of missions? Should we start with a choir? Should we start with a public day? All these like specific details eventually as we start the missions. Okay, so the focus that will happen today, the focus that I want to talk about more is the understanding. I just want to highlight some key differences, some key thoughts. It's more of a discussion point just to get to think about some of these issues, and maybe just touch on the idea of how we should approach it, but not really in depth. It's just understanding some differences. Okay, so some of you might have seen these artistic renditions before in emails. It's just the difference between the East and West. It's actually done by a Chinese artist, and it's compared to Germany. So you can see here, for example, it's talking about punctuality. I think yani, for Masr, the red line probably should go a little bit more, but that's the approach. The next one's also easy, it's just queuing in line. I have one more easy one. This is okay. So the main topic, the point of discussion is around this concept of the burden of knowledge. And I think this, while this affects us all, because of our weaker public education system and level of poverty, it's probably a bigger issue in the West compared to here. The age we live in now is often called the information age or the information boom. So what happens is the amount of information we receive in a single day today is a huge volume of difference compared to the amount you would receive 100 or 200 years ago. I mean, if you just think about the internet, the globalization, the idea of TV, how many channels, the magazines, all these things compared to 100 or 200 years ago when most people couldn't read or write, most people didn't travel, and the only information they would have received was from pretty much the people directly around them. So this has a huge impact on the way we think, and it's important to think about how this affects the different ways we would receive the faith. So if someone came and told us something about the Christian faith, how would this difference affect us? So I think the best way might be to illustrate it with an extreme example. So if we think about a young girl growing up maybe in a village in Egypt or in Ethiopia or somewhere a few hundred years ago, she'd probably grow up without obviously a formal education. It probably would, even if they had the money to provide it, it probably didn't make sense because her life was limited to farming and you don't really need that kind of education. Her and her family probably can't read or write. The only information she knows, she learns from the people around her, which means that basically her chief source of religious teachings would come directly from her mother, her father, and her faith is very simple. It's built on trust. It's built on trust towards her family, trust towards the people around her. And I mean, there's some kind of beauty and sort of peace to her faith, but it's not really the same thing we can expect today. If we look at someone now, obviously, especially in the West, you'd see someone who grew up in a multicultural society, someone he's bombarded with different viewpoints of the world. So what they learn at home is very different from what they learn in school, which is different from what they see on TV. There's a lot of competition for what kind of viewpoint or what kind of religion or what kind of thought process they should go through. And just the idea is they don't have the luxury of being in a single unitary world where everyone has the same belief system. Everyone around them is consistent in the way they think.
فعنده دايما مجالات مختلفة بتأثر عليه وده طبعا بيصعب تنميته.
So while these are obviously extreme examples, and it's probably not fair to say that that's the East and West today, it sort of gives the idea behind it that there's a difference between an average child growing up in Egypt or in Africa and an average child in the West. And I think this issue is also something that we face as a church with the Sunday school kids here and abroad, just with the developing education systems and with all the technologies that are sort of competing for ideologies. So I'll just discuss this burden of knowledge through three main points. One is just inquisitive, independent, and history. It's a culture, like it's, there are three characteristics which I'll describe in more details. So the the first one is just the idea of inquisitive. Inquisitive is someone who's curious, someone who's very questioning. And I think this is an increasing culture in the West where the education system is sort of moving towards encouraging people to ask questions instead of a system where the person who asks a lot of questions is an annoying student. It's a system where the person who asks the most questions is often sort of the best student, not the one who answers the most questions, the one who can ask the most questions. And along with this culture of inquisitiveness, this culture of questions, what you get is also the competing ideologies, which is it's a strong combination, because you're surrounded with a whole bunch of religions. You're surrounded, like we said, with all these different ideas. You read and you watch a lot of things that have atheism ideas. You watch things that have a whole bunch of other religion ideas from other religions, and at the end of the day, you're left with a mind that's sort of programmed to question and to ask. So what ends up happening is that you have to sort of try to find your way to the thinking, the worldview that makes the most sense to you. You can't be like the person we were describing earlier, where you just accept the belief of those around you, where sort of you're given one faith and the whole world is of the same faith around you, so all of a sudden it all makes sense. Now it's sort of up to you to find your way in this world. So what ends up happening is you end up having a lot of questions about issues related to Christianity, related to God, and a lot of thoughts come to mind. I've listed a few different things here, but the idea, most likely one person won't have all these doubts, but at the same time what could happen is that one person could reject Christianity for just one of these doubts. So you don't want to have, you know, like know three or four responses but not know the responses to all these issues.
Issue.
Yeah, so the idea is you don't want to get caught off guard when someone argues an issue like this. Like, for example, if someone comes and tells you that, this was a statistic I found, 97% of scientists in the U.S. Say that humans and other living creatures have evolved. So 97% of scientists in the U.S. say humans and other living creatures have evolved over time. But what I'm trying to say is, if someone has that statistic and you don't understand the issues that surround this, you might be caught off guard. You won't know how to respond, and you might sound a little bit irrational in your response. Just a clarification, it's 97% of scientists, I think. So, I mean, I think the key idea is that we, as the verse from the book of St. Peter says, we have to always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. And I think the key issue is, if this was addressed to Christians, how much more should it apply to someone who's an evangelist and is going specifically for this purpose? So as Christians, we should be ready. As evangelists, I think we have to double and triple the effort to really know all these key points. And I think that you don't have to have an answer for every single question, but you should have a response. So the idea is you should have a way to address it. If someone tells you something you don't know directly, you should have a way out. You should have a way to sort of bring the discussion to something where you want to discuss it. Sometimes it's like the lecture we had on winning the person, not the argument. So you have to have that sort of in mind at all times. Okay, and I think one very important thing is that atheists, especially in the West, usually feel very uncomfortable when they're debating with a Christian, and they feel that the Christian is very subjective about his or her faith. That sort of they don't feel like it's someone searching for the truth, but someone just trying to defend a bias that they have. And it's often what happens is, because of that bias that they feel, what happens is, even if we're very biased and we're not thinking about it in the right way, what happens is we turn down valid arguments from them, and at the same time we put out an argument that's not correct and we insist on it.
هو عارف كويس انه فرق او بدل. التفكير الغربي احنا هنمشي ورا الحقيقه مهما كلفتنا، مفيش حاجه اسمها انا مقتنع بحاجه وهي كده وخلاص.
So the idea is to be less like a lawyer who will defend anyone, whether they're innocent or guilty. That's the lawyer's job. But to be more like a doctor, a physician who's trying to find the truth. He knows, he sees a problem in front of him, he uses the tools, whatever he has, and he might not know for sure, but what he's searching for is the absolute truth. He's not just trying to defend someone who he knows might not be innocent. And we should always have the comfort of knowing that if we're truly searching for the truth, us as individuals, we'll find it. And if we believe that Christianity is the absolute truth, then that's the way that you'll be led. There's no sort of going astray. So that should always be our goal, even if at times we don't know all the answers. Okay, so the second point is independence, and once again this is a big cultural difference. So you can see in the way the artist drew it out, the Western culture the individuals tend to be more independent in their thinking. From an early age, they're expected to work even when they're living at home. They're expected to move out as soon as they're done with high school or university. It's less of a societal life. It's less of a sort of a group life. And at the same time, the idea of the boss or the idea of authority is seen very differently. So whereas here, authority seems to be a really big figure, it's someone that you sort of don't say no to, someone you always accept what they say. In the West, it's not always seen in the same way. It's seen more of a sort of a marginal difference. So when you combine these two sort of characteristics, what ends up happening is you see that the people don't want to be exactly like those around them. They want to be different. They want to have their own sort of special traits. And they're less willing to accept faith simply based on someone else's authority. If someone tells them this is the way it is, they're not as comfortable accepting. They want to think it out for themselves. They want to sort of, it's like in the example of the village girl, it won't really work. They have to reach their own conclusion. And I don't think this as a concept is very new in the Bible. And we have Doubting Thomas, where in John it says, "So he said to them, unless I see his hands, the print of the nails, and put my finger into the print of the nails, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." So St. Thomas here, he had 11 disciples or 10 disciples who saw what happened, and yet he still was unwilling to believe it, even though these are sort of the 10 disciples that are right there and they were always there with him from the beginning. So just this idea of having an independent way of thinking is nothing new, but it's just something that we see sort of in different situations and we see more in the West.
شخصية توما الرسول اللي بالرغم ان في 10 تلاميذ بيحبوه بيحترمهم عارفين المسيح كويس قوي كلهم اجمعوا ان المسيح قام انما هو مش قادر يوصل للفكره الا بايديه بعينيه بطريقته عشان يقدر يقول انا مصدق المسيح قام.
And in order to address this sort of characteristics as evangelists, it's important to avoid being paternalistic. It's important to avoid sort of speaking to them with the approach that I know what's best for you. That whole idea comes across as maybe rude or condescending. It comes across as someone speaking from above them, which won't be received very well. And instead, the emphasis should be on leading them to their own personal experience. It's the sort of a personal experience with God, that self-discovery, which I think is something that's already in the Orthodox faith. It's not really far. The foundation is there. So if you just sort of lead the way and let them discover it by themselves, it will come across and it will be accepted a lot more easily. Okay, so the third issue was history, and I don't think it was very clear from the title, but I think one thing that's always worth stressing is that most Westerners have grown up in a Judeo-Christian culture. They're usually quite familiar with the Christian faith, maybe not the details, but they've had experiences in the past. They've seen, they've been invited to church, as most of them. They've had some kind of experience. So the idea is, there's often a reason for their rejection. There's often sort of a history with the idea of the church. So it's important to sort of it's important to understand that, and I'll go into a bit more detail, but you never know what their only experience was. Maybe their experience, they had a really bad experience before with a certain Christian. Maybe the only experience they have with Christians is Jehovah's Witness and Mormons knocking on their door, which would already sort of raise certain questions for them. So there's some kind of history there. There's something to think about. And I think one easy example is Gandhi. So when a missionary asked him, Gandhi, though you quote the words of Christ often, why is it that you appear so adamantly to reject becoming his follower? He said, I don't reject Christ, I love Christ. It's just that so many of you Christians are so unlike Christ. If Christians would really live according to the teachings of Christ as found in the Bible, all of India would be Christians today. And along those same lines, not only people reject Christianity, but sometimes they reject certain forms of Christianity. So what happens is you see a lot of people who say that they don't practice organized religion, or they don't practice institutional religion. So it's a bit similar to what happened with the Protestant Reformation, where there was a lot of corruption. So in order to rectify some of the wrongs that they saw, they ended up forming a new branch, which, you know, it had its own problems, but that idea still happened. There's people who still reject Christianity for many of the same reasons, or even just because they're being judged or they're being looked upon in a bad way when they try to approach a Christian before. So I think I was going to show a video here. I don't know if we have something on.
Yes.
But there's a video that I think gives a good sense of sort of this rejection of organized religion. I think many of you might have seen it before, but it's someone, he talks a lot about how he hates religion, but he loves Christ, and it's actually got 22 million views on YouTube, so it's a huge video.
I'm going to الاساس هو يحط المسيح في كفه والدين في كفه. عاوز اقول الدين مش هو المسيح. ربنا حلو قوي وده اللي المفروض نركز عليه، ان انا لما بركز على الدين كآلف ساعات بركز على القضيه وعلى العبوديه وعلى دوري انا والمطلوب مني انا واطلع ليا ان انا وحش، وان انا لو ركزت على ربنا هفهم يعني بيحبني، هو اللي بيشتغل هو اللي بيديني. فبيحاول يقول انه احيانا المؤسسات الدينيه بتشوه شكل المسيحيه وده خطر مننا يعني. وده انا ما سبتش كل الكلام، هي مشكله طبعا لطيفه جدا، ولو الكلام بس ممكن اذا مكتوب وتعلمه نقرا. طبعا هي فيها حته شويه بروستات يعني، خلينا واقعيين الموضوع مش بالشكل الابسيوت قوي، لان الرب في دور عليا ان انا اقبل ان انا اصدق ان انا امسك ربنا. لكن هو معاه حق انه احيانا احنا قال حته لذيذه قوي، قالت الكنيسه مش متحف للناس الكويسين، الكنيسه دي مستشفى للناس الوحشين. وطبعا المفهوم ده جميل قوي ويلخص المعاني.
Yeah, and it's the same issue that sort of, it's the idea of the negatives in the church coming up in a way that someone sort of has to respond. Someone comes out and is fed up of it and ends up, you know, basically sort of rejecting a lot of the things around it. So I think there's a verse, if you go back one. It's sort of this whole idea of the history with Christianity. I think the verse that's sometimes very relevant is the seven woes. So, but woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. And the idea here is that as evangelists in the West especially, we have to be very cautious because this person's already had an experience. So it's important to sort of try to figure out what kind of experience that you have to tread slowly. You can't really go in with the same force you would go into someone who doesn't know anything about Christianity, because there might be a negative perception. There might be it might be a neutral feeling, but just the idea of it being negative would need a different approach. You'd need to think about how to rectify the situation, how to maybe even how to train the people in the church in that country how to receive foreigners, because you never know sort of what's going into this person's mind. You never know why he's rejecting you from the onset. It might be something that he's already experienced.
يعني لازم تعمل حسابها دايما ان دي خلفيه انت مش عارفها، احتمال كبير قوي تكون خلفيه راقبه بسبب خبرات قديمه. الافضل انك تحاول تكتشف الخبرات السيئه دي وتحاول تطلعها حته حته، لكن مش بسهوله انك تتكلم مع واحد عبير وكده ما يعرفش حاجه ليه.
And for people with a negative perception, it's important to focus on how the Coptic Church or the Orthodox Church is different. You have to sort of, you have to approach them in a different way. You have to convince them somehow that there's a reason why what you experienced in the other church or before you won't experience here. And I think there's one really that I can recommend, one really good book called Becoming Orthodox, and it's about basically a Protestant who he went out to find the first church. His mission was to create a church that is the same as the first church. And he kept taking he kept doing research, and to his shock, I mean, he wasn't happy about this, but when he found out the first church had sacraments, he found out the first church had priesthood, he find all these things, when he found out, it was sort of a bit of a shock to him, because in his mind, that's something he always rejected so adamantly. And eventually what ended up happening is they created several different churches, which over sort of after they finished their research ended up all being baptized into the Eastern Orthodox Church. But this idea of coming back to the first church could be very appealing.
We بيقامن بالأرثوذكس يعني تحولت إلى الأرثوذكسية تبدا كذا في السبعينات والكتاب ده احنا عملنا عليه 10 سنين كتيب صغير ندور يطبع الكتيب ده ملخص يعني كان في كتب الغلاء والصافي لما يدرسوا فكر الأعمال وبعدين حسوا إن في فرق كبير قوي غير اللي موجود في فكر الأعمال في حياة السنين الأولى وبين اللي هم عايشينه في كنيسة بوسطن فقرروا يدرسوا كل كائنات في العالم أنهي كنيسة أقرب للكنيسة الأولى فاكتشفوا إن الفكر الأرثوذكسي هو أقرب حاجة للكنيسة الأولى واتعملوا كلهم تبع الكنيسة الأولى وبعد كده بقى حاجة اسمها أمريكان أرثوذكس تشيرش في عشرات الآلاف دلوقتي من الأمريكان عندهم الساكرمنت عندهم اقتنعوا بقيمة الأسرار وقيمة الكهنوت وقيمة العدل والشفاعة وحس إن هي دي حياة الكفاسات اللي في الجامعة.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop.
To be honest, the one thing that I think is very important is to understand that people have the shock in the first place. Yani, this is the first step because sometimes we go in with with full force and all of a sudden we find extreme rejection. So it's just, you have to tread really slowly. You have to sort of And you have to differentiate the church. Those are the key issues that I was.
بس عايز اقرا حته من كتاب بتاع الارثوذكسيه قانون الايمان لكل عصور بتاع انتوني كونييرس. وفي حته بيقول فيها ان جميع الحجج التي اخترعناها نحن المسيحيين كدلالات على وجود الله هي ليست براهين كافيه، هي فقط عون للمؤمنين. لا يمكن لاحد ان يبرهن على وجود الله. ان امكننا عمل هذا لنثبت وجود فلا لزوم للايمان. فلا توجد حجه عقليه مهما كانت صالحه كفاية لتهدي أي شخص إلى الإيمان إن لم يكن يرغب شخصيا في ذلك. يعني بأكد فكرة أنه إحنا كتير قوي بنقعد نركز على إزاي أنا أحاول أفهمه وأوصله، بنتعب نفسنا قوي. مش بقول ما نعملش ده، بس لازم مبدأ الإيمان مهم.
وقالوا Thank you.